As a leader, how do you successfully create conditions that drive a coalition, spark a movement, or propel a transformation?
There are a lot of different ways to get to right, the right thing to do. If there's anything that I've learned is I'm not always right. I may be right in my own mind, but I've got to provide room for others to be right too.
That's Devery Buvner-Vorwerk, founder and CEO of Devery BV Sustainable Strategies and former Chief Communication Officer and Corporate Vice President of Global Affairs at Cargill. After 15 years of success with Cargill, Devery's taking her unique experience, which lies at the intersection of government, NGOs, and the private sector, to build coalitions across many segments and help navigate today's fractured geopolitical landscape. Known for her courageous leadership, Devery pushes herself and those around her to lead for today and for the future.
There's societal expectations being placed on businesses to stand up and stand in as it relates to their environmental and their social footprint. And so my goal would be to support businesses as they go through these difficult moments.
I'm Meryl McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Devery Buvner-Vorwerk. So we're here with Devery Buvner-Vorwerk, the CEO of Devery BV Sustainable Strategies.
Hi, Meryl. It's quite an honor to be with you.
I know you just started this new venture. Tell us about what you're doing.
It's an exciting moment, I guess, when you start anything. I spent 20 years in government and in the private sector and also on boards of NGOs and nonprofits. And the new venture is about helping businesses continue to be successful in a geopolitical environment that's fragmenting. There's increased pressure that's coming to the traditional business model. And there's societal expectations being placed on businesses to stand up and stand in as it relates to their environmental and their social footprint. And so my goal would be to support businesses as they go through these difficult moments. And as there's more immense pressure, Meryl, on them to not only perform on the business side, but harmonize purpose and profitability.
What was the impetus that actually had you decide to do this?
I hit Washington right after graduate school. I actually started at the World Bank, and I haven't stopped. And there was one moment where I did leave my company, and I went out on a venture to work in a law firm, and then was brought back to lead a transformation. And it was thrilling, and it was intense, and it was the last 3 years of my life. And at this particular moment, the company was going through a reorganization. My function got reorganized, and then I stepped out and said, this is the right moment. Well, I've been on the inside of a company for the last 15 years. I feel that I can actually, it sounds counterintuitive, by going it alone, I think I can scale impact even more by working across a whole, subset of companies as opposed to being just in one spot.
Right. And for our listeners, I just want to let them know that the company you're referring to is Cargill, which of course was one of the world's largest privately held companies. Quite an amazing organization.
Yeah, I had a fulfilling career there.
That's terrific. And what is, you've looked at your background, you mentioned, you've been in government, you've been in NGOs, in obviously the corporate side. What have you found to be the commonalities regarding leadership?
It's interesting because I started out, as you mentioned, in government and doing analysis for a government agency. And then in my first role in private sector, doing government relations. And I quickly began to realize that you can't get anything done alone. And so you have to work with these multiple stakeholders. And I think what I've observed is that whether it's in government or nonprofits or the private sector, to be successful, it's all about leadership. Folks aren't different. They're just focused on a different organizational mission. The qualities of leadership required to be successful at a nonprofit are the same qualities of leadership required to be successful in government and private sector. NGO leaders are some of the most business-minded people I've ever met.
Right. And some of the most purpose-led, of course, as well. And the flip side is there's many business leaders who are led by purpose.
Exactly. And I think that's something that I think is coming out more and more, especially with the Business Roundtable CEOs stepping out and talking about being purpose-driven. I mean, purpose has been part of the company narrative for quite some time. But I don't think that the rest of the world has entirely understood that that's genuine, and it is quite genuine. But the key is, how do business leaders balance purpose with profitability?
It's interesting you're bringing this up, because as I'm sure you've been following as well, there has been some media talk about, are they really serious or is this just lip service? And as you're saying, in your experience, I'd love to hear what you think.
Well, I can't speak for every leader that committed to the shareholder and state balancing shareholder and stakeholder value. But what I can say is, I believe, you know, generally that it's authentic, that the leaders of these large companies and global companies at that are committed to, you know, surfacing their ability to drive positive social, positive environmental change. The challenge comes in that we've got leaders who are standing up and they have the leadership intent to say, I'm leading this company who is focused on this particular purpose, let's say financial inclusion, but I've got to get the entire organization behind me. Right. And so just having a CEO stand up, or her or his, you know, his leadership team stand behind it, isn't enough. And I think that's why there is some criticism, is this is going to take a remarkable feat of leadership for these companies to carry out the leadership intent. And so the second, leadership's messy. The second a leader steps out and says, we'll do the right thing here, the arrows start coming. And that's where, in my experience, if those that are first to criticize without, you know, going in and trying to understand the leader's intent, if they're first to criticize, they don't want that leader to be successful. And I do believe that leaders of companies can and will be successful if they systematically figure out how to carry out their leadership intent through the company. And a big part of that is culture. Many of those leaders that stepped up probably don't have the right culture to carry it out. So they're going to run into a culture gap.
And you yourself you've always had a reputation of being a very courageous leader. Where did your courage come from?
I mean, I'd have to reflect and say how I was raised. I had a very courageous mother who, after my parents divorced, I saw her, you know, I think I was 6 years old, I saw her have to re-enter the workforce, figure out how to re-up her teaching credentials, start from scratch. We had very little money. And, you know, I saw her kind of go through that, to a point I supported her one summer where we drove up and down the state of California to figure out how she could get a better teaching job. So I was very much side by side with her. My dad was a self-made electrical engineer, never went to college, but was quite successful. I have a lot of examples of courageous leaders. And I was taught that at a very young age. And it's not something that I can entirely explain, Meryl. But I've got it. When I stare down the face of what's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, I'm always going to do the right thing. And it's painful sometimes.
What goes through your head when you're debating what to do and you know what's the right thing and you know it's going to be painful?
Well, and this is where I think you learn as you go, right? So I can see it more clearly and I'm not as worried about the consequences. And that comes with experience. And oftentimes I'll see it, you know, what's the right thing to do from my perspective. And I think where the leadership learning comes in is there are a lot of different ways to get to right, the right thing to do. And so if there's anything that I've learned, you know, having, you know, several battle scars over this, is I'm not always right. I may be right in my own mind, but I've got to provide room for others to be right too. And that's where I think now I'm, as opposed to 10 years ago, I'm a much better listener before I dive in around what's the right thing to do.
I love where we're going with this. So when you were talking about the many ways to be right, it kind of brings me to another thing I wanted to ask you about. I know one of the things you're really known for is building coalitions. And where do you think, when somebody's looking to build that coalition or to build a movement, what should they really take into consideration?
most of my greatest successes as a leader have not been because I'm the one leading. It's been because I and we have been able to build a successful coalition. And one of the greatest learnings I had was stepping into the fray around opening the market to Cuba. The pre-coalition building is really important. Who are going to be those strong advocates and organizations who will be willing to stand up and stand into the fray? Because oftentimes when you're building coalitions, it's around something that not everybody agrees with you on. And my single best learning in building the coalition, the U.S. Agriculture Coalition for Cuba, was to get folks all to agree on the charter from the start. Why are we here? What do we stand for? And that charter is something that becomes non-negotiable down the road. And when you get that agreement up front, if you join this movement or you join this coalition, you're agreeing to these things. When the coalition politics gets so difficult down the road because the political environment gets dicey, we bring everybody back to that charter. And I can't tell you how many times that charter kept the coalition together. Now, did some members leave as a result? Yes. And that's, you know, that's their prerogative because it may not work anymore. But having the charter and the platform and being very clear on the things that the organization is going to drive versus not saves you a lot of heartache. So the first thing is just getting an agreement in building the coalition. And then the next thing, learning from that, is that now that the coalition knows and understands what it stands for, everybody gets a lot of energy around, okay, how are we going to make this happen? As I put together kind of a small wheel, and at the center, I said, all roads lead to Congress. And so if we're going to do a media activity, or we are going to take a stage at a think tank, or we want to go have this conversation with X, Y, or Z, we need to test, is it going to impact our ability to move the legislators on this? And if not, let's not do it. And that was a really good lens to look through, because then that separated the priority things we needed to do as a coalition to succeed from the, gee, these are really nice to do. And it worked really well. It allowed us to make decisions, because often coalitions aren't funded all that well, right? So everyone's kind of putting their heart and soul into the effort to get something done. And to the extent that when you're driving change, you can make sure you're working on the activities that are going to get you the best outcomes, you want to do that.
I think those are great examples for any kind of coalition or movement, inside or outside a company. And what do you think, we both of us used coalition and movement sort of as interchangeable, but do you think they are, or do you think there's a difference?
I think there's a difference between a coalition and a movement. I think a coalition can help drive a movement, but a movement is much more unwieldy. And what we're learning through a movement is you have kind of a coalition of people that are supporting the effort. But quite frankly, these things end up taking on a life of their own. And a movement is about driving massive social change. In my experience, using a coalition, you're much more targeted. It's time bound. You have a more defined outcome. In a movement, you don't know where it's going to go, because it's
right.
Brings people in that, to drive a movement, you've got to be even more comfortable sitting with people who disagree with you and trying to have kind of a common purpose. We all look to say, okay, look, we want to put food at the center of social change. But in a movement, not everybody has the same intention, because they're all driving their own efforts. So over time, I think a movement then fully pivots to a different state of affairs.
Yeah, it seems that often true movements are when various people with disparate agendas find some commonality and it takes off. But that means any one of you have to let it go.
Ooh, that's important. The movement becomes bigger than any one individual, including those that founded it. And the movements that I think are successful are the ones where those who had so much individual capital invested can have the courage to step back and say, I got to let this go. I can't entirely control the outcome. The success of a movement is that others are picking it up. And they may do it their own way, but they're still committed to the movement. They're still committed to the change.
So let's switch tacks here a little bit and talk about early in your career. You know, you had success very early. When you think about your leadership journey, where are you on the path now?
This may sound a bit tongue in cheek, but I think where I am is I'm at the start, Meryl, because I don't believe we ever perfect our leadership. I think we continue to evolve. Maybe I'm halfway or midway through my career, but on my leadership journey, I'm thinking about the new leap that I've just taken to start my own company. I'm feeling like in many ways I'm starting all over again. I've got years of experience under my belt, so maybe some more confidence, but I'm going into something I don't entirely know how to do or think I know how to do yet because I haven't done it before. So I'm at the start of this particular phase of my leadership journey. Now, that said, I would say that as it relates to how much time I've been in the workforce, I recognize that I'm further along than others. And that's where I look back and say, okay, how do I help bring others along who are just starting on their journey, right? So now I have this obligation to acknowledge that I have the ability to help and mentor others as they're moving through their journey.
And I imagine you had an opportunity to do that as you were leading the transformation at Cargill. There was probably a lot of really helping others move along with you. And how did you do that?
Well, I think my greatest leadership lesson and something I'm proud of having done right was when I came in to lead a transformation of a global function that had a lot of moving parts, my inclination, you know, the way I'm wired is I had already thought out a lot of it on paper. But the way I led was I listened for 7 months. And now that may seem like a long time, but that was time very well used. And what does it mean to listen? What it meant was to allow smaller groups, get people in a room, give them the topic, give them the challenge we're up against, and get 10 smart people in the room and go design it, come out with an answer. And doing that multiple times brought a lot of people along. I have these ways of working with folks where I create things called flash mobs, right? Okay, 10 of you quickly get in a room for a defined period of time, and then it dissolves. Could you gather a group of people and go workshop that and bring it back? It's a co-creation process. It's human-centered design. There are always going to be people who are going to resist the change, always. And that for me is the hardest part. But when you're leading, not everybody wants to come along.
What have you learned about giving people parameters so that when they go off and design it and bring it back, you know that it can fit within your boundaries?
It's a good question because one of my messages was eliminate the boundaries, you know, dream big. And it was interesting how I'd have to say that a few times before people really believed it. And so this is where you get tested. I got tested as a leader. Well, you asked us to go dream big and then we brought it back to you. You can't immediately reject that, right? So early on in the process, I don't think there were many boundaries. It was, what do we know we have to solve for? Go dream big. And, you know, when a few people came back and got validated that way, we started getting to a better product. And then I could start seeing, is it in line with the vision where I think I as the leader want or need to take the organization? And I think the term that was used was freedom within a framework. And I worked with Marjorie Krause at APCO. She actually, I have to give that to her. She put that in my head. And that was really helpful, right? Let's give people the freedom to dream, but then we've all agreed on kind of a framing.
Companies and organizations have depended on you to lead change during transformations. So how do you really do that?
Well, in leading change, I think there's a responsibility of the leader to have sat down and actually thought through what could that change look like. So in my experience, having just led a large transformation, I did a lot of sketching. I had a book I carried with me constantly. And as any idea came, I kind of put it in there. And so going into the transformation, giving people a high-level directional vision without giving them everything in your sketchbook is really important. But the other thing that's key is that as a leader, you have to know what you're doing. You actually have to have a good sense of what's going on, you know, in the outside world, the profession, what's the expectation of the organization you're building and what's its role in the company or in the, you know, in the broader enterprise. And so I came in with a very clear understanding and clear vision of what our purpose was in the company. I didn't throw that out day one for everyone, because again, I think the key to transformation is it's a co-creation process, but I could guide my teammates along so that we all got to the same conclusion. And I unlocked a lot of creative energy at the right moments, ensuring that I was throwing out the right kind of tactical advice to the team or the right visionary advice at the right moments. And there is a bit of an art to leading a transformation. Your team and the employees that are going through the transformation need information on a regular basis. But the key is, what type of information are you going to provide them so that they can continue to be brought along? And what are you asking of them to provide to the process?
So, Devry, what do you think the leader of the future is going to look like?
I have a 4-year-old daughter. She's turning 4 on Sunday, and she's fierce. Or my son, Charlie, who's almost 7, and I see him going through the paces of neighborhood politics with the other kids. I think they're the leaders of the future. The children are. And what are they going to look like? They're going to look like the product of how we build them. So there's a lot going on right now in society. And my hope for the leader of the future is that they are leaders who treat others with respect. They're compassionate leaders. We cross a threshold where we're no longer attacking people because they have a view that's, you know, different than ours. My hope is that we transcend this particular moment in time so that we can get back to leaders who are leading with, you know, political civility, and that our communities don't feel so divided, because I don't believe that we are.
That's wonderful. And that's really describing, as I'd asked, what traits they may have. What do you think leaders most need to let go of?
I think you need to let go of the past. That's challenging. You don't forget about the past. You don't forget about your experiences and what built you. But leaders are leading for today and for the future. And so if we hold on to how we believe we needed to be successful in the past, we're forgetting about how we're leading into the future. And that's a big part of being a leader through a transformation. I'm reading a phenomenal book right now called Community by Peter Block, because I'm doing a lot of thinking about communities and how we bring communities together. My big belief is that we save globalization by making sure our communities are healthy and are thriving. And in his book, there's a point in there that says those communities that succeed into the future are the ones that don't look back and say, we want it to be the way it's always been, as opposed to those communities that sit together and say, how do we want to be in the future? Where do we want to go in the future? Those are the communities that become more successful. And so I believe, whether they're individual leaders or a group of leaders, in order to be successful, we've got to let go of the past. The other thing I think leaders need to let go of, and I just love this notion of let go and lead, Meryl, is we need to let go of our egos. We all have them, and healthy ego drives us. And so it's not that we don't need to acknowledge that we may need certain things as a leader to feel confident or supported, but to be most successful, we've got to put those egos in place in a way that the leader doesn't get out in front of herself. It's difficult to conceptualize that, but it's just something I've learned. And a tangible example is, if I'm getting up to speak, when I used to get really nervous, I finally realized it was because I was so focused on myself and what I was going to say, as opposed to what the audience really needs to hear.
Right.
And so it's just, it's amazing how I don't get nervous anymore, because if I can put myself in the mindset that I'm thinking about what do these people need to hear from me today, I think less about what do I need to say.
Well, it's almost the difference between offering them a gift and giving a performance.
Well, and it's true. I mean, information's coming at people, Meryl. I mean, why waste people's time if you're not talking to them about something that they can understand and apply to their daily life? Then why would they spend the time listening? Why do they want to follow a leader who's irrelevant?
I'm really, really excited about what you're doing, and I'm looking forward to seeing you become phenomenally successful, as I know you will.
Thank you, Meryl.
So this is Devry Bufner-Vorwerk, the CEO of Devry BV Sustainable Strategies. Devry, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Meryl.
Devry's experience is fascinating. Let's talk through some of the salient points she shared with us. First, when starting a coalition, get folks to agree on the charter. Ask, why are we here? What do we stand for? Use the charter as a guide to prioritize time and as a true north when making decisions. Second, know that being part of a movement means having a common purpose, yet sitting around a table with those who may disagree with you. You can't control the outcome. The success of a movement is that others propel it forward. Third, when driving transformation, give people permission to dream big. Devery shared how she created flash mob brainstorms where people could come together, dream big, and provide recommendations to move forward. Lastly, when speaking to a large group, don't get wrapped up in what you're saying. Instead, think about what your audience needs to hear. Shifting your mindset is liberating and empowering. It was such a pleasure to have Devery on Let Go and Lead. To continue thinking through the ideas Devery shared, visit letgoandlead.com and check out our episode discussion guides. Thank you for being with us.